On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Ma, two nights in a row. Yeah, we're going to try to get through 3 hours this evening. I'm Bob. Let me introduce you to my friend, the Virus, who is still hanging around, but I'm going to just gut it out and get through. I hope Agnes and I are both getting better, although we certainly don't feel like it. But it's a relative thing, because I am certainly feeling far better than I was about this time last week. So it seems like, let's do a show. Let's do 3 hours of conversation. And let's see where that 3 hours of conversation takes us. It would be hard to imagine a starting point this evening that didn't include the ongoing markup hearings in the Senate Finance Committee. I watched some of that today, and it just... Did you ever wake up the next morning after a night when you had done something that you really, really wish you hadn't done? And, you know, maybe you had too much at the office Christmas party and made an ass of yourself in front of the boss, or went over and propositioned somebody that you really ought not have. Or, you know, maybe you drank somebody's six-pack handsome or six-pack purdy, and you woke up the next morning going, ew, why, ew? Well, watching the markup hearing was a little bit like that, because when it was over, I just felt like I had witnessed someone or a group of someone's doing something really nasty. And the nasty thing was, of course, the act of screwing over the American people in rather profound fashion. I don't know if you're, I know what you guys are like. You have been following this today, so you know that the Rockefeller public option amendment failed. You know that the Schumer public option amendment failed. And you know that they failed with the connivance and collusion of Democrats in name only. The Democrats in name only, who go around every 6 years or so, oh, I'm a proud Democrat. Kiss my butt. It was sickening. It really was. It made me feel dirty to watch it, because I knew that where the people who, the Democrats who were opposing the public option were concerned, I knew, as you know, why they're opposing it. They're opposing it because they've been paid to oppose it. Come on, let's use plain, respectable, upstanding, good old-fashioned English to describe this. They're opposing it because they've been bribed. Plain and simple, they have been bribed by the health insurance industry, by the health care industry, by the big pharmaceutical industry. They have accepted bribes. And I would not have any problem whatsoever looking any one of those sorry rat bastards in the face and telling them that they have been bribed, and we know it. Come on, we've seen the numbers of the donations from the healthcare, pharmaceutical, and insurance industries to Max Baucus. We've seen them. We are the American people, and we are not stupid. We know a bribe when we see one. And we are seeing one in living color. and we are watching the pernicious effects of corporate money on our political system writ large. I mean, this is almost Old Testament biblical with the hand, the unseen hand writing upon the wall and having writ moving on. I forget what the unseen hand wrote in the book of God only knows. But in this case, the unseen hand is writing, "We paid these bastards to vote this way, and you little people can't do a goddamn thing about it. Too bad, suckers." That's what the hand is saying. And the question is what we are saying in response to it. Some of this stuff is really, really... I'm just looking at the reportage from Chicken Noodle News. And I've... the amendments by Democratic Senators Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia and Charles Schumer of New York were opposed by all 10 Republicans on the committee. No, really? And a few Democrats, including committee chairman Senator Max Baucus of, it says Montana here, but we all know, of the healthcare industry, of the insurance industry, of the pharmaceutical industry. Baucus explained that he liked much about the idea of a public option, but that he knew a health care bill containing the provision would fail to win enough support in the full Senate to overcome a Republican filibuster. "I fear if this provision is in the bill, it will hold back meaningful reform this year." That's an interesting statement, especially when you compare and contrast it with a statement made in the last 24 hours or so by Iowa Senator Tom Harkin. He said earlier today that he has the votes to pass a bill that has a public option plan through the entire Senate. Tom Harkin recently took over as chairman of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, and he told Bill Press that Democrats comfortably, that's the word he used, comfortably have the votes for a public option. This is the quote. Listen. "I have polled senators, and the vast majority of Democrats, maybe approaching 50, Jesus, vast majority. Why isn't it the entirety? They are... because there are people who are Democrats in name only, and we both know it, right? "I have polled senators, and the vast majority of Democrats, maybe approaching 50, support a public option. So why shouldn't we have a public option? We have the votes. I believe that we'll have the 60 votes now that we have the new senator from Massachusetts to at least get it on the Senate floor. But once we cross that hurdle, we only need 51 votes for the public option, and I believe there are comfortably 51 votes for a public option. But that reality does not exist inside the Senate Finance Committee, where there is a level of skullduggery at work, and a level of corruption, and a level of malfeasance in office that is so profound as to be sickening. This is... Now, bless his heart, there's a whole bunch in this world that I don't agree with Jay Rockefeller about. But I'm not going to be such a thick-necked ideologue that I won't give credit where credit is due. And I have to give credit to Senator Rockefeller on this one. "They're getting away with banditry," he said. "They revel in it." Talking about the tactics used by insurance companies to avoid covering high cost or high risk people deemed to be, you know, people with human problems. How can you call someone high risk or high cost? How can you call a human being high cost, and yet the insurance industry does it every day? High risk. Welcome to the planet. No one here, as Jim Morrison said, gets out alive. There's no such thing as high cost or high risk. There is only human. What we're dealing with are the ongoing attempts to create artificial barriers, artificial boundaries, artificial pigeonholes into which these corporations wish to stuff human beings in an arbitrary and capricious exercise in what can only be termed corporate eugenics. Rockefeller went on and said, I feel so strongly about it because it makes so much sense, talking about the public option. The people I represent need this because they're helpless. Where health insurance is concerned, of course, I would have to say, Senator Rockefeller, we have a lot of health care problems in your home state of West Virginia that are brought about by your unceasing and slavish patronage of the coal industry, and most specifically the mountaintop removal industry. People are literally dying. Your constituents are dying, Senator Rockefeller. And they need the health care that they need because of what coal does to Appalachia. But, you know. And then there's Charles Grassley. Charles Grassley, who makes me yearn for, I don't know, that little world from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I want Charles Grassley to live in Toontown for a little while so somebody can drop an anvil on his head. I don't think it would do any damage, because there's nothing there except a sort of vacuous obeisance to the corporate America.
A government-run plan will ultimately force private insurers out of business. It will come to a single payer. That denies the American people choice.
Actually, single payer gives America a choice. The ultimate choice. It would give America, the entirety of America, the ultimate choice. The choice between living and dying. A choice that many Americans do not have now because they are defaulted to die, dumbass! And that's just not a hell of a lot of a choice, is it? Choice? We're defining the corporatocracy now as perpetuating a choice? So let me see if I've got this straight from Senator Grassley, and feel free to tell me if I don't. He thinks it's more important to be able to choose not to have health care than it is to simply have health care and survive. Honest to God, this choice is chimeric. Chimeric, I don't know. Is it a CA? I don't know. But I do know that it's phony baloney. If you have a job that affords you health insurance, how much choice do you have? One, maybe two, perhaps three? Or do you have some sort of plan where you can choose between Is it like that little box you have to deal with when you're setting up a browser? And well, which search provider do you want to be your default search provider, and there's Yahoo and Google and Bing and then, you know, 19 other. No, nobody gets those choices. Oh, I don't. You know what? I want the surgery coverage from Aetna, and I want the medical office coverage from Cigna, and I want my diabetes coverage to come from Blue Cross. No, it doesn't exist. The only choice right now for most of America is insurance or no insurance. And in that and then within that sort of species or group or world, it's no choice at all. If you can afford it and it's offered through your employer, you get it. You check the little box. But if you can't afford it, you don't check the box. If that is a choice, it is a Hobson's choice. You know, the horse by the door or no horse at all. A Hobson's choice being defined as a false choice. A take it or leave it choice. You know, I just don't understand the world of people like Charles Grassley. Charles Grassley is from Iowa, of course. And I got to thinking, anybody who's listened to this program for very long knows that for reasons that have little to do with reason or common sense, I have some sort of I live in a mountain state, and for some reason or another, I have a real fondness. I've never even set foot in the place, but I have a real fondness for the state of Iowa. So utterly, radically, and completely different from what West Virginia is, and Iowa, of course, produces. You know, they've got two senators. One is Charles Grassley, who is an ass in every meaning of the word, and Tom Harkin, who is a good liberal. Labor liberal, a progressive, upstanding, moral, decent, forward-looking, forward-thinking, honest-to-God liberal, who interestingly says, hey, I can get a bill to the floor if you guys will just get out of the way. I also have a fondness for Iowa because I am an alumnus. I'm an alumnus. Of what we lovingly refer to as Harvard on the Monongahela, Harvard on the Mon, otherwise known as West Virginia University. Don't worry, I'm not going to start talking about sports. Well, I am a little bit. Because Saturday I sat and I enjoyed profoundly watching Iowa hand Penn State its rear end again. But my fondness for Iowa goes to the fact that West Virginia University is what is called, and every state has them, I do believe. West Virginia University, founded in 1867, is what is called a land-grant university. And the groundwork of that concept of land-grant was a certain parcel of land was given by the federal government to the states, and the sale of that land, the proceeds from it, then went back to fund the creation of a state university. And in the case of my beloved West Virginia University, the land granted for sale to support the creation of WVU is off somewhere in Iowa. And I remember learning about this when I was a student, And always thinking, you know, I'd like to go out. And of course, you know, when you're sitting in Morgantown, West Virginia, and you're thinking about someplace in Iowa being the sort of mother ground of your alma mater, it's like something out of W.P. Kinsella's Shoeless Joe, or what went on to become Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner. It's some vast tract of fields that in the summer ripple with the gentle winds passing across it, stirring a whisper in the tassels of the corn. You know, that kind. But, you know, come on, it's America, it's 2009, and if I went out there, it's probably a freaking strip mall or a McDonald's or something, okay? But I have this affinity for the state of Iowa. One of our dear friends, who will have been gone for almost a year now, was originally from Iowa, that being our pal Kenny, known to many as Clyde from WD40.com. I continue to miss him and continue to think about him. So in watching that game, you know, and you know, you don't have to write me again and tell me how much you hate it when I talk about sports. Because I understand. I mean, it's not, you know, it was a bonding thing for my father and me. And so when I watch something now, it is as if my father, gone these several years now, soon be three. It is as if he's with me. And I guess I got some of that affinity for Iowa from him, because he liked to remind me of an Iowan by the name of Niall Kinnick. And it was Niall Kinnick that I was thinking of when I was watching the end of the game Saturday evening, when the Iowa Hawkeyes, called by Brent Musburger for some reason the Hawks. God, I hate Brent Musburger. I just despise him. Kirk Herbstreit, he calls Herbie. Blech. Never trust a man who gives you a nickname before you've given him permission to give you a nickname. You know, kind of like the way George Bush called the Karl Rove Turd Blossom. What can I call you besides Carl? I need a nickname for you. Well, you could call me Turd Blossom, sir. No, see, that doesn't know. But anyway, watching that game, and I was thinking about Niall Kinnick. And, you know, the upper Midwest has a Republican tradition that's kind of hard to get around. And a lot of those Republicans were what we used to call progressive Republicans. And again, I was put in mind of this as well by watching the first episode of the Ken Burns National Parks documentary. The Republicans, who were back then the liberals, you know, freeing the slaves, that was kind of a liberal idea, and it was. Those liberal Republicans were the ones who created the legislation and did what was done that created our national park system. Sorry, Democrats, can't take credit for that. You just can't. But there was that liberal Republican progressive streak, especially through the farming Midwestern states, and Niall Kinnick was part of that. His grandfather had been governor of Iowa in around 1912 or so. But Niall Kinnick himself was a football player. He was a halfback for the Iowa Hawkeyes. And he won the Heisman Trophy for the football season 1939. And in the 1940 general election, he supported Wendell Willkie. Whenever I hear that word, I think of Bugs Bunny screaming, "It ain't Wendell Willkie!" But no, he supported Wendell Willkie. The world was not at war. And he, like many Republicans, was an isolationist, apparently. He had been a brilliant football player, but he turned down offers to play both professional football and professional baseball. Why? Because he had a notion of public service, oddly enough, and he went on to law school. But the war got in the way. But backing up, by the time 1940 rolled around, he had won the Heisman Trophy for the 1939 season. And, of course, he was iconic around Iowa and was asked to introduce Wendell Willkie during the 1940 campaign. And he had said, in accepting the Heisman Trophy, which was... his acceptance speech was described by one writer as he said Niall Kinnick tackled Demosthenes and threw Cicero for a 15-yard loss. What he said in his Heisman acceptance speech, he said, "If you will permit me, I'd like to make a comment which in my mind is indicative perhaps of the greater significance of football and sports emphasis in general in this country. And that is, I thank God I was warring on the gridirons of the Midwest and not on the battlefields of Europe. I can speak confidently and positively that the players of this country would much more, much rather struggle and fight to win the Heisman Award than the Croix de Guerre." How true. And somehow I don't think we'll be getting a Heisman speech with that level of literacy anytime soon. But anyway, in 1940, he was called upon to introduce Wendell Willkie at a rally in Iowa. And he said this: "When the members of any nation have come to regard their country as nothing more than the plot of ground on which they reside, and their government as a mere organization for providing police or contracting treaties, when they have ceased to entertain any warmer feelings for one another than those which interest or personal friendship or a mere general philanthropy may produce, the moral dissolution of that nation is at hand." One more time, if I may. "When the members of any nation have come to regard their country as nothing more than the plot of ground on which they reside, and their government as a mere organization for providing police or contracting treaties, when they have ceased to entertain any warmer feelings for one another than those which interest or personal friendship or a mere general philanthropy may produce, the moral dissolution of that nation is at hand." Somebody grab Glenn Beck by the throat long enough to try to explain that concept to him. When I started thinking about this, the theme that I had surrounded is back when Republicans had souls. He was an isolationist, Niall Kinnick. His Heisman acceptance speech would indicate that he wanted no part of a war in Europe or anywhere else. "The players of this country would much more, much rather struggle and fight to win the Heisman Award than the Croix de Guerre." Croix de Guerre. But when war came, Niall Kinnick put aside his theoretical isolationism and dealt with the reality of the Second World War. Niall Kinnick volunteered for the United States Navy. Niall Kinnick was going into active duty in the South Pacific at roughly the same time that my father was. Niall Kinnick was assigned to the USS Lexington, CV-16. Essex class she was. He was on a training flight and his plane began hemorrhaging oil at such a rate that it was impossible for him to return on that training flight to his aircraft carrier, which at the time had a deck covered in aircraft in the first place. Niall Kinnick ditched and died. I've no doubt that had he survived, he would have come back and been significant in Iowa politics. The people of Iowa were shaken to their very cores to see that their beloved native son had been killed. An effort was immediately generated to rename the football field there at the University of Iowa in Iowa City after him. But his father spoke out and said, no, that would be highly inappropriate. My son was but one of 400,000 others. And it would be inappropriate to single our loss out in the naming of the stadium. So that would wait until 1972, I believe, when the University of Iowa's football field was named Niall Kinnick Field. I was sort of put off onto all of this the other night when I heard some babbling blatherskate at ESPN declare that Jesus H. Tebow in the Kentucky game had paid the ultimate price. That was the phrase he used, paid the ultimate price. And suddenly I thought of Niall Kinnick's aircraft ditching in the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico on that training mission as the Lexington sat at anchor off Venezuela. But Tim Tebow paid the ultimate price because he got a concussion on the football field. But I was also thinking about what it used to mean to be a Democrat versus being a Republican. And how far perverted that has become. When the members of any nation have come to regard their country as nothing more than the plot of ground on which they reside and their government as a mere organization for providing police or contracting treaties, when they have ceased to entertain any warmer feelings for one another than those which interest or personal friendship or a mere general philanthropy may produce, the moral dissolution of that nation is at hand. I suppose the Republicans have always been working that whole moral dissolution of the nation side of the street. It just comes with the turf, I guess. It's because they're patricians. It's because they are it's because they are authoritarians. It is because they side with that portion of society which wants to grab and get and gain and do business, all of that. And so I suppose that's why they cast it in those terms. But those phrases just ring with me. When the members of any nation have come to regard their country and their government as a mere organization for providing police or contracting treaties, well, how does the Republican Party view the government now? Beginning arguably with Reagan's run for the presidency in 1976, and all that hateful business that he used to describe government. And, of course, Grover Norquist, and I want to make the government weak enough that it can be drowned in a bathtub. Niall Kinnick would say that the words of Ronald Reagan and the words of the Grover Norquist tend to indicate that the moral dissolution of the United States is at hand. And I thought again about all of this. See, there's a purpose behind this. I thought again about all of this when I saw Senator Grassley's words, again an Iowan who would not be fit to carry the cleats of Niall Kinnick. A government-run plan will ultimately force private insurers out of business. Well, damn, Chuck Grassley! I didn't know that private insurers were your primary constituent. I thought it was the people of Iowa. How many, you know, and I'm just asking, how many insurance company CEOs live within the territorial confines of the state of Iowa? If it's one, I'll be surprised. How many CEOs of giant pharmaceutical houses live within the territorial confines of the state of Iowa? Again, if it's one, I'll be shocked. How many healthcare corporation CEOs live within the territorial confines of the state of Iowa? Again, if it's one, I'll be gobsmacked. There are moments, and you will find them, and you will hear them along the way, if you're paying attention, where you will have the opportunity to see the veil pulled back from the scabrous, syphilitic faces of people like Charles Grassley, and you will see what they are really about. And that was one of them.
A government-run plan will ultimately force private insurers out of business. It'll come to a single payer. That denies the American people a choice.
Bull! But I'm glad he said it. Because he spots himself clearly among that demographic that his fellow Iowan, Niall Kinnock, described as people who regard their country as nothing more than the plot of ground on which they reside, and their government as a mere organization for providing police or contracting treaties, and people who have ceased to entertain any warmer feelings for one another than those which interest may produce. I'm sitting there in Morgantown and thinking, fantasizing fondly about what Iowa must be as I looked around at the hills that ring that little town in northern West Virginia. Yeah. And we all do it. We who decently love this country, as I know we do. I know it because I hear it in your words when you call and you write and you talk to me about what you feel about what we have discussed and described about life in Appalachia and life in the resource colony, life in not quite America. I know that the idea of America and being American stirs something in you that extends far beyond those which interest or personal friendship or a mere general philanthropy may produce. It is deeper than that. What Niall Kinnock was getting at, but he dared not say because it wouldn't have been terribly manly in 1940, what he was describing was love. The deep and abiding love of country that is the very nursery and cradle of patriotism. You can't academically have patriotism. You can't academically love your country. It is an emotional response first and foremost. And the tingle that happens at the playing of the national anthem, whether it be in the Horseshoe in Columbus or the Big House in Ann Arbor or Mountaineer Field in Morgantown or General Neyland Stadium in Knoxville or Bryant Denny or Jordan Hare or the Swamp or Between the Hedges, that tingle that happens when it's played is not something that the music does. And it's not something that some theoretical patriotism does. It's a deeply rooted understanding that we have a common heritage and a common bond. And the Republican Party does everything in its power, every blessed day in this era, to destroy that. That is why we are divided geographically. That is why we are divided regionally. Divide, 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 divide has been the mantra of the Charles Grassleys and the Ensigns and the Enzies and the Bushes and the Cheneys. And the Roves, divide, divide. And ultimately, finally, when the divisions have been fractured into so many crystalline pieces, the word conquer will come. And then, as Niall Kinnock said, the moral dissolution of that nation is at hand. So, that's what I'm after, or that's what's going on in my head. That's the hurt that I feel when I see shameless shills and hacks and flacks for the insurance and the healthcare industry, like Charles Grassley, like Max Baucus, that's why it creates such a visceral disgust. That's why it creates such a damn near tearful anger in me. Because it negates and puts the lie to real heartfelt patriotism from generation unto generation. So maybe that's a way to approach it. You know, during the 8 long, tormented, tortured, and miserable years of the Bush administration, we were asked by the right wingers, "Why do you hate America?" And we earnestly responded, "God Almighty, it's not because we hate America that we fight, you bastards. It's because we love her far too much to leave her into your tender mercies." But I really, really, really wonder, not so much why the likes of Charles Grassley hate America, but why the likes of Charles Grassley love corporations more. Because it seems to me that money is a mighty poor substitute for patriotism. And money is a mighty poor substitute for that fondness that goes beyond property and a simple philanthropy such as Niall Kinnock described. But it's hard to deny it's hard to deny that it would appear that such is the case with Republicans, that they will continue, they will persist in calling things patriotism when in fact they are cheap and tawdry masquerades for it, and that they are masks covering nothing more than avarice, nothing more than greed, nothing more than the most cheap and base of human emotions. I don't attempt to aggrandize myself by talking about, you know, sitting there wondering about Iowa. But I don't now, nor shall I likely soon, do much traveling. So these places have to exist in my head. And I will learn what I can from the people there, and from books, from video. And when I learn about these places, and from you, it reinforces, because you see, it's hard, for, as white as America mostly is, or used to be, it's a white that's French and Dutch and Scots-Irish, and with the influx of the people that we have brought here to do the work that we, that the white folk didn't want to do, we have not set up a situation where we would have a natural affinity for one another, and it has manifested itself on many, many occasions. So that creating that national sense becomes difficult. But it is possible. And when we do it, and I think among other people that Lincoln got it when he talked about the nation as a union of shared ideas and shared values. When we do it, it speaks to some of the better. It speaks to some of the better impulses in our nature. So that's where we start this evening. Where we wind up is anybody's guess. But sooner or later, we will all have to figure out that we are all in the same boat, unless we are health insurance or pharmaceutical or health care CEO. We are all in the same boat. And the problem is, we have some people who are doing the business of the CEOs who are in our boat, lighting matches and throwing them onto a sea of gasoline. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. City, we're all in this together. The city's changing, 'cause we are changing, and we're all in this together. Every 12 seconds, someone remembers that we're all in this together. In the kitchen of your rent control apartment, we're all in this together. Come on, baby, I don't mean to rush you. I only wanted to reach out and touch you. I've got to start to open my heart. I know you think about jumping ship before it sinks, but we are all in this together. Ask a scientist, it's quantum physics, we are all in this together. And on the subway, we feel like strangers, but we're all in this together. Yeah, I love you, we love her, and she loves him, but we are all in this together. You know, baby, there's never been protection in all the history of human connection. Come on, darling, it's all right to show me you don't ever need to.
Not to. Ben Lee. We're all in this together. And we are. We really are. Because the process of trying to wrest what is rightfully ours, decent health care as a matter not of privilege, but by God of right, is something that will only be accomplished by the universal cacophonous demand of we the people recognizing that we are indeed all in this together. You know, there are thousands of years of human history of great men and women trying to exhort and extol us to our better impulses. Whether it's John Donne and No Man is an Island,
or similar sentiments expressed by Shakespeare. Or in the words of the ancient Greek dramatists. That common theme runs through, that we have a common humanity. And sitting in a hearing room in Washington, D.C. right now are about 10 people plus a handful of things that call themselves Democrats who are doing everything in their power to hold back the forces of common good, common weal, and common decency. So I guess we'll just start hour two, maybe 5 minutes early, and we will go to the phones. Hey,
hi,
welcome
Bob.
To the program. Hey, Juanita.
I'm having a lot of trouble with my computer, and I just found out last night that you'd been sick.
Oh, yeah, I was. Still am.
I can hear a little bit in your voice, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, you're not wrong at all. No, there's still a lot of concrete in my sinuses.
Yeah.
It would appear to be concrete mixed with black pepper, too, because there's a lot of sneezing and watery eyes. It's miserable.
Yeah, I know you had to be not to be on the air.
pretty much. I don't mind missing a show to go and watch the boy play football and my daughter cheer. But just to lay out and play hooky, no. So...
there's a couple of things on my mind about the thing that bothers me, has bothered me so much about Baucus.
Mm-hmm.
Baucus.
Yes.
Is, I hadn't really paid that much attention to him until he had that hearing, so-called public hearing. And the people that weren't invited were the doctors and the nurses and the people who had some knowledge about what goes on, you know.
Right.
And they were arrested in the audience.
Yeah, and hauled out.
Yeah, and he looked like he took such pleasure in that. That's what really got me.
Well, he did because it was that old RCA Victor record label in living color. With the little dog sitting at the megaphone of the record player, listening to his master's voice.
Right.
He was doing the bidding of the healthcare industry and the health insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry, who had given him so many millions, and he was proud of himself, Juanita.
That's it, and that was it for me with him. I mean, nothing else he could do, but then he's done more. God. But I think I understand what you're talking about.
I'm glad to know that, because I wasn't sure if I was making any sense. But,
well,
and I got to admit that I got several emails saying you must watch the Ken Burns documentary. You must. And I generally resist musts. But
yeah.
I sat down and I watched it last night. In fact, I watched the rerun of it twice just to let it sink in real good. And I'm glad I did, and I understand why people were saying you must see this. And so I'm shaped a little bit this evening by the sentiments expressed in that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what our country's supposed to be. I mean, there is so much lying going on. You think about our whole country is based on lies, and, you know, like advertising. Advertising is just a bunch of lies. And it's just getting more and more accepted all the time. And then you turn around and we accept, I don't, but our country seems to accept torture, lots of little torture among our enemies, you know. And that spreads.
Well, torture, well, it's not really torture if we don't think they're human, is it?
Right. But my problem is I do think they're human. But I just, and then you watch, if you watch, see them by chance on TV, I mean, they don't mind lying through their teeth. And when I was growing up, I think that was one of the biggest things, and not that I've always been truthful, but the biggest thing, if supposed to like it then. You know, you'd read it in comic books and all like that was, there'd be no liars in heaven. and the people, they get up and they don't mind lying.
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second, but... No, go ahead, Juanita. I'm sorry.
What was that about?
Pardon?
You said you lost me?
Yeah, I'm having some technical issues going on here, and it's kind of frustrating.
Okay.
And I just lost your audio for a minute.
Well, I just, you know.
No, but I... Yeah, what...
We got a ways to go, let's put it that way, and I hope we get there. It's kind of like you just feel sometimes... You feel like a motherless child. Oh, gosh.
No.
They could do such wonderful things, and they haven't got sense enough to realize that they can lose their power, and then where will we be?
Well, I think I understand what you're saying, Juanita, because, you know, I don't know if the same impulse strikes you as strikes me. But, for instance, I will see Charles Grassley.
Mm-hmm.
On one of these Sunday Babblehead shows.
Yeah.
And I will just, and you know that it's not going to happen, but you just sit there and wish that one of those paid shills from the for-profit media would look at him and ask him, sir, what the heck is wrong with you?
Right.
Well, is there something wrong inside your brain? Tell us about it, because we can be sympathetic to that. But why do you want to keep people from having health care? Why do you not understand that basic, decent health care is a matter of it is a human right? You know, how many successful cultures have there been on the planet, Juanita?
Yeah.
Where they didn't think that whatever health care they had was a human right?
I don't know.
I mean, granted, it certainly wasn't the British Empire. But by the same token, if you're a member of a tribal society, they don't withhold health care from you because you're not a chief or a big man or whatever term you want to use. If you're any society, peasant societies, they do for each other as they can.
Well, you know,
and it's only when you get into this model of money as God.
Right.
That suddenly doling out health care and rationing health care between to the have-nots becomes important because there's a dollar to be made in it.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I frankly don't care if they go out of business.
I don't either.
Because they're
haven't evil. They earned it, Juanita?
They're evil. Let's put it that way. I've heard some more, you know, testimonies of people, how they were turned. It is unbelievable. They showed the hearing that, who's our guy from Ohio that we like?
Oh, John Boehner?
Dennis Kucinich.
Oh, Dennis Kucinich. Okay, I thought you were being...
Yeah, he had a hearing, and he had some people on there telling about how they'd been treated or their families had been treated by the insurance companies. And you could see compassion on his face and such disgust for the insurance companies. And so when will you think we'll ever win? Are we going to just be dusted away, what that song says, dust in the wind? I mean...
That's certainly the $64 question, Juanita.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
And it's ultimately, it's an expression of something undergirding it that is the question of whether, you know, what you're asking is, will humanity move boldly forward into a hopeful future, or will we cower and wet ourselves...
Right.
In a backward facing conservative yearning for the past.
Yeah, because you know that if they take over again, that you know we're stuck. Our goose is cooked. I'll tell you.
Well, we're not. That's the thing. We worked so hard. to put so-called Democrats in power. And you said if they take over again, it's like they never gave up power.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And they haven't. They're winning. They're winning on this about the health care. They're winning so far.
And, you know, you said, do I care if the private health insurers go out of business? I don't.
No.
Because I don't give a rat's rear end about the CEO of Cigna. If I could if I could see that man living under a bridge drinking screw top wine and eating scraps out of a dumpster tomorrow, it would be a happy day.
Yeah, you can't help but feel that way.
And I realize that probably marks me as a shallow, cruel and dastardly person. But on the other hand, the folks who work inside those companies, I want them to continue to live and do well.
Yeah.
I don't think that a nation that calls itself anything approaching moral, Juanita, can tolerate companies that base Christmas bonuses on how many sick people somebody denied coverage to.
Right. And in such cruel ways.
I mean, that's like paying a bonus to our servicemen and women based on how many brown people they kill. Oh, well, let's see. That's you got 15 little hash marks on your helmet there, Sergeant Johnson. That's going to be another $10,000 for you this year, son. Because when you get into paying bounties like that, and that's what we're taught, that would be paying a bounty on human lives in a military scenario. And right now we have a for-profit healthcare industry that is paying bounties on human lives in terms of coverage denied and coverage refused and coverage rejected.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we can go on much longer if something doesn't give. I don't know. I guess it's up to us, but we're frustrated in that they only want to listen to those other people that say, oh, he's a Nazi communist, which that's, oxymoron or whatever?
Just for starters.
Yeah. And then...
No, an oxymoron. That's Rush Limbaugh. I'm sorry.
Then people call up and say, well, Frank told her what kind of planet did she live on? Well, she was asking him, a Jew... about his communist leanings, you know, going along with. Why wouldn't he? I thought it was a great answer. Why wouldn't he say that? But you know what I'm saying. And it's just like I heard somebody say, you know, we just like wants to see Obama say, listen, enough is enough.
Well, do you ever go over to BartCop.com, Juanita?
I haven't in a while. It's been a while.
I've been a Bart Cop junkie since the late 90s. And I was looking at the page today, and he's working this theme of Obama's tendency to, and apparently Gary Trudeau is as well over at Doonesbury, of Obama's apparent predilection for thinking that he's solving problems by giving speeches. I took a lot of grief. I got a real nasty email over the healthcare speech when I said, you know, it was a great speech.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But where's that great speech gotten us? Because two public option plans were killed in the Senate Finance Committee markup hearings today.
Right.
And both of them were reasonable. And given, this is the important part, Juanita, given the partisan makeup of that committee, if the Democrats had voted as Democrats, either one of those amendments would have easily passed.
Right.
But in both of those cases.
Including one of them, my senator.
Yes, Bill Nelson. But in both of those cases, Democrats voted not just with, but like Republicans. As Republicans, our buddy Brandon, up in New York City, said He said, I posted this on Facebook today. When Senator Charles Schumer made a second attempt to add a watered-down public option amendment in the Senate Finance Committee, it, too, was voted down with the help of three Democrats, Max Baucus, Kent Conrad, and Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas.
Yeah.
And Brandon says, whose side are you guys on? You are screwing over the uninsured, and we will remember you.
Well, you know, I used to think Conrad was a pretty good guy, you know, but not anymore.
No, he sort of showed his true colors the other day when he channeled his inner moron. I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, but oh gosh, I'm trying to think when this happened. It was last week because I was sick at the time and sitting there going, I got to get on the air with this. Oh, it was September the 24th. In the Senate in the Senate Finance Committee hearing a week ago today,
yeah,
he made the following argument. This is a quote, and I want you to, I mean, just kind of sit down and strap in, Juanita, because it'll make you scream.
I'm sitting down. I'm not strapped in.
grab the arms of the chair and hold on.
Okay.
This is Kent Conrad. You know who? You remember our pal Gunny Bob? He warned us about Kent Conrad a long time ago. Kent Conrad said last Tuesday, let me just conclude for my progressive friends who believe that the only answer to getting costs under control and having universal coverage is by a government-run program. I urge my colleagues to read the book by T.R. Reid, The Healing of America. I had the chance to read it this weekend. He looks at the health care systems around the world, and what he found is in many countries they have universal coverage. They contain costs effectively. They have high-quality outcomes, in fact, higher than ours. They're not government-run systems in Germany, in Japan, in Switzerland, in France, in Belgium. All of them contain costs, have universal coverage, have very high-quality care, and yet are not government-run systems. So in essence, Kent Conrad said that France does not have a public insurance system that covers all of its citizens. There's only one problem with what Senator Conrad said. And that is, Juanita, that France has had a public insurance system that covers all of its citizens since 1945.
Well, I understand it's one of the best there is.
It is the best. The World Health Organization, which I'm sure radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby would say is a communist front organization, the World Health Organization reached the conclusion that France has the best health care system in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had a doctor on Washington Journal this morning, and he said we had one of the worst systems. And another doctor called in. He was the surgeon. He was like, I think he said he was 85, and he was talking about, you know, how complicated everything was, you know, and he said, I think you and I could get together and figure this thing out, you know, in a simplistic way. But he said that... both of them said this is the worst system. The worst. It's just.
I don't find that at all surprising.
No, I mean, I thought that was great. The guy called in, you know, and the guy was, he said he started doing surgery when all he got paid was maybe chickens and eggs, you know, because that's all the people had and they wanted to give him something. And he sounded like a great guy, you know. But it's just the system, you know. I think it's probably the overhead, don't you think, a lot of it? And then you get greedy doctors. The trouble with some of the things that they've done in the past, such as when I was in it, when all that 1980 stuff started, and they were talking something about 1982, it was supposed to get rid of the bad doctors. Instead, it turned around and got rid of the good doctors. We had a lot of great doctors, the family doctors and all, and they just crucified them. And the other doctors, they just played the game. They went along and played the game, you know, like the CRT and the DGR or whatever, you know. They just played the game. And we got stuck with some of the worst doctors. Because I was around enough to know those back then. You know, I don't know them all now, but I do back then. And we lost some of the best of the best. Though some of them were actually run out of practice. And so there's a lot of that, you know, that happened. But
there are factors in the American healthcare system that are not being addressed. And I've said this before, Juanita, and I might as well say it again, that at some point in time, as we discuss healthcare, after we have sealed the after we've sealed the leak in the boat, you know, the one that's letting in more water than we can bail out.
Yeah.
Then we're going to have to stop. Then we're going to have to deal with some of the other holes as well. And one of them is
people, like you said, lighting matches in the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to take the matches away.
Yeah.
Guys, it's gasoline out there. At some point in time, we've also got to have a serious discussion addressing the stranglehold of the American Medical Association has on medical education in this country. The AMA, by virtue of how it manages medical schools, and it does, creates an artificially, because remember, you know, you know how I feel about unions. I'm pro-labor as the day is long. But the AMA is, if there is a pernicious union out there, the AMA is it. Because the AMA artificially makes sure that there are not as many doctors as there need to be in the United States. And they do that to keep, as nothing more than a matter of wage inflation. You know, I know that, for instance, in the medical school culture, if you're going to go and be a family practitioner, the guy who's going to be a surgeon or the guy who's going to be a radiologist or the guy who's going to be a neurosurgeon, they kind of laugh at the guys who are going to be and women who are going to be family practitioners because, well, you know, you're only going to make $150,000 a year, you schmuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
They talked about that, too, two doctors. They talked about that also.
And that's the thing. What's wrong with making $150,000 a year?
I'd love to have to have. I would love to.
I mean, can you not eat?
Right.
Can you not drive a decent car?
Yeah.
You know, but then again, that's sort of that's another example of how this nation is sort of on its ear, as it were. We pay teachers $25,000 a year, and we pay shortstops $25 million.
Yeah.
Now, who's doing the more important job?
Right.
We pay the guys who see maybe two patients a day 15 times as much as we pay the doctor who sees maybe 50 patients a day.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the thing is, in neither instance, you know, let the meritocracy handle who can be a neurosurgeon, or who can be a this, or who can that be that. That's fine, but quit. But you know, we got to get the American Medical Association's hand off of the hose.
Well, this surgeon that called in, he said he dropped out of AMA years ago. He didn't like their tactics at all. I thought, he sounds like a great guy, you know. But another thing they were talking about, the education, he said a lot of them go into the specialties that you were talking about, exactly the same ones that you said, because of the more money and because of all the money they owe on student loans.
Bingo, and that's the other thing. You know, the reason that medical school tuition is so high is, again, because it is kept artificially high to prevent there being too many doctors. I mean, you know, you can't just... I mean, what would America come to if there was a doctor on every corner? That would be terrible.
You'd be right about lawyers, but not doctors. There's not enough doctors, not for every place. But they were talking about somebody called in about the other countries didn't make as much as our doctors, and they said, well, they usually don't have to pay for their education either, you know.
Yeah.
Heavily in debt.
And so, and so naturally, you know, the people coming out of medical school, they're going to choose. Well, I mean, I remember when my mother was in intensive care at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, and was being treated by a resident there. I had nice conversations with him.
Yeah.
And he said, look, here's my plan. He said, I'm completing my residency in emergency medicine. I'm going to practice it for 15 to 20 years, and then I'm going to quit. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing something I want to do.
Work with the poor.
Or, no, you know, I don't know, go and be a master basket weaver.
Well,
you know, do so, but I thought, you know, God almighty, you've been through 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of medical school, a year of internship, 3 years of residency. You're about to come out of residency and go and do 15 years of misery.
Yeah.
So that eventually you can do something you want to do. I mean, isn't that just a little bit bass-ackwards? Shouldn't you be working on... But no, the money's not there for doing what you want to do.
Right.
You know, maybe the guy wants to go be a poet, but there's no money in the poetry business.
Like all the people, you know, about, you know, these jobs that illegal aliens, you know, are getting. Well, they're not paying enough for people to live in this country. You've got to have transportation. You've got to have all kind of junk. That's another thing, they need to do something about these insurance companies. My son, his friend that is, you know, he's retired now from the service, and he was in Iraq. Worked with the Marines. He was what you call it, where they take care of the sick with the Marines.
Medics?
Well, they call it medic, but there's another word they call them now. But anyway, that's the same thing. And then he was in that first Iraq war. And now, like, he's moved. He's bought a home. And it's kind of like in the country. It's a well-traveled road that he lives on. And there's a certain insurance company that's advertised by a big-eyed bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he moved out there, they've raised his insurance rates just because of where he moved, and I don't know why.
Well, one of the things that needs to happen, if it could be done and not have Republicans screw it up, which means it's almost impossible, is insurance, whether it's car insurance or homeowners or, you know, your boat or whatever, is controlled on a state-by-state basis. And in virtually every state, the insurance commissioner is a former worker in the insurance industry. You know, I don't know why it is that the insurance commissioner couldn't be, you know, say, a member of a citizen action group or something like that is expert in the laws of the insurance industry. So it becomes a rubber stamp. And as such, what we need to, the word is preempt. The federal law needs to preempt insurance in this country and standardize insurance laws throughout the country. And be hard on insurance companies. Because, see, if we got universal health care tomorrow, the insurance companies wouldn't go out of business because they're still selling car policies and umbrella policies and general liability policies and homeowners policies and boat policies. And, you know, one of the most delightful frauds that happened in the early days of the space race, as soon as the Soviets put Sputnik up, there were charlatans who went around selling satellite insurance that would insure your insure your home and your life in case a Russian satellite fell on you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And you know, they made some money at it.
I'm sure. Well, what about all these big companies taking out insurance on workers? And they don't supply them with insurance, so they know they're probably going to keep the money that they're still working there. You know, and there's one big company that supposedly has quit doing that, but a lot of the big companies, and you don't even know it, and you could have leave a child or, you know, your family, and they could be destitute, and these people have made all this money off of you. You heard about that, didn't you?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's an old Walmart trick.
Well, I didn't say nothing.
I know,
but
I know.
It's not. They claim they're not doing it now, but
right. But they got stone cold busted, taking out life insurance policies, and it was a brilliant move from an accounting standpoint, because the money you pay on the policy is deductible as a cost of doing business, and then the money you get back on the policy when the person kicks off is not taxable. It's not a taxable event because it's life insurance. Okay. So Walmart wins on the front end and wins on the back end, and nobody
and
ever knew.
The family never knows that they,
right.
they about it.
Right.
And that family could probably use some of the money. Most of them could have, especially if they worked at those places.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Juanita, I got to roll along, but it's been a wonderful conversation.
I something about that murder.
Oh, yes. You mean in Kentucky?
Just one thing. If you give me just one thing.
Sure.
That thing just has broke my heart. And, you know, I can't help but think about Michelle Bachmann.
How so?
About the sentence.
Yeah, that blood is on her hands.
And she has no idea, I'm sure. But, you know, he came from down here, probably 30 miles from where I live. That just strikes it, too. But just breaks my heart, Bob.
Well, you know what? It's heartbreaking, but let me just add a little bit more sickness on top of it, if I may. This is some. You know who Michelle Malkin is?
Oh, do I?
Yeah. She has now come out and made light of this lynching.
I'm sure.
She said,
"I killed the Kentucky census worker, along with every man and woman in America who is guilty of having said or written anything critical of government. The criminalization of conservatism continues."
Uh-huh. Well, because it's true. Anyway,
yeah, poor little, you know, poor little martyr. But yeah, at least now... And how they couldn't, well, we're not sure it's a suicide. I don't know how they could even, but no, it wasn't.
He had it written on him.
Among other things, an anonymous tipster has given out, that there was duct tape around his neck.
Oh.
And, they had taped his identification tag to his neck. Duct taped it to the left side of his neck.
Wow.
I mean, the right side, almost on his right shoulder.
Well.
So that kind of lets out, you know, why would you do that if the guy had, you know, as Andrew Sullivan notes, if he had stumbled onto a pot plantation or a meth lab or something? No, you wouldn't do that.
No, it's all this hate stuff. It's, you know. And it is so ridiculous and so sad and heartbreaking and evil.
Don't forget sickening.
Like you said, and don't forget what?
Sickening.
Yeah, yeah. It's disgusting. Well, I'll let you go, Bob, and I hope you continue to feel better, and I'm glad you're back on the air.
Well, thank you, Juanita. I'm hoping so, too. We'll talk soon. All right. Bye-bye. Bye now. It's about half past the hour and half past the entire program, so we will continue things. And hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good to have you back, Bob.
Hey, Reverbo, what's up, brother?
So much happened last week while you were gone. I just don't even know where to begin.
I was beside myself in my drug-induced haze.
I think I sent you some sick bay material, and I don't know if you had got a chance to look at that. Some great stuff from Krugman about Galbraith.
Yes, I did.
Galbraith?
Yes.
Superb stuff. And then that Bill Gates thing. Holy cow, did you take a look at that?
Yes, I did.
Max Blumenthal, that guy's a genius.
I'm proud to call Max a friend of the program. And yeah, he is a brilliant young man.
His latest book just sounds outstanding. I wrote the title of that down. I got to order that from my library. If I can find out what that was. Yeah, Head Guy is just right on. But I'm presuming that you're looking at the picture of Miss Foreign Affairs right now as we speak.
She absolutely made my sick room so much more perky.
Oh man, she'd be enough in my studio in no time. Yeah.
Buck, darling, Buck.
Oh God, yeah. What do you want? Oh God, I got to do everything myself. Jesus.
Yeah, don't move. Bump. I'll be right back.
Bump everything up to condition red. I say that all the time. Oh God. Well, here's something we can start with. Get workers into this to the evening. Here is a quote from J.K. Galbraith that will resonate with everyone, of course. He was so great because he, and I learned this through the Krugman piece, his whole concept of the economy or of economic systems was that they were not an end in themselves, but they were a tool, a way to achieve the life, liberty, and happiness part.
Well, isn't that what it is?
Well, yeah, that's supposed to be what it is until people started worshiping, the dollar bill, just worshiping the system just because it's a way to get rich as opposed to a way to live a full and happy life, of course. So this guy understood that, we create the market. It just doesn't exist all by itself just for the fun of a few thousand white Christians. But anyway, so he goes on, he says, quote, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest, I can't even read my own writing, is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Huh?
That's a beautiful thing, a superior moral justification for selfishness. And I think Reverbo, that sort of touches on what I was saying earlier with about Charles Grassley, that you just want to look at him, you want to see somebody do the at long last, sir, have you no shame speech to him.
Oh yeah.
Because a superior moral justification for selfishness, is that Charles Grassley in a nutshell? Is that Max Baucus in a nutshell? I mean, I'm hammering on Grassley because it's just so easy to hammer on a Republican. But it's certainly no different with Baucus. You know, I'm not gonna give Baucus a pass because he's got a stinking D behind his name, because he's behaving like an R. And so's Blanche Lincoln. You know, R Walmart.
Oh yeah, all of this is going to anybody who ever thought, and I guess I did. I was really hoping this time. You know, you thought that the Democrats get behind each other, watch each other's back, you know, and get behind each other and get stuff done. You just, here we go again. There's no difference between these people. They just spend the money in different places, that's all. But the great thing, here's this thing with Galbraith's thing, and on all you're ranting about all these sellouts, all these hookers, but you're right, but they're all that way. It describes all the people on the right, all the conservatives. Because there was another thing on the internet that I was reading. I may have even sent that to you. Some people were comment about the this whole healthcare thing, and the somebody was expressing this whole concept that when these people, like, you know, they're not really against abortion, and they're not really against unions, they're not really against, when it comes right down to it, minimum wage. And not really against welfare. What they're really against is the underclass. They're really against people who they just think are beneath them. And so anytime there's something that comes up that would elevate, right, the people from below, would be productive for all of us, hey, that's just an immediate no from them. And that's what it's all about. It's this goddamn moral superiority thing. Pardon my Polish there.
Yeah, because wow, this is tough to get to the bottom of.
Well, but that's, you can see where we're going here.
Yeah, and well, it's, they are afraid because they are so jealous of their own possessions. Let's see if we can work through this, Riverboat.
Okay.
Because they're so jealous of their own possessions, they are scared to death that somebody who is piss poor is, they're scared to death that they're going to wind up with a nickel that could have been theirs, and they're going to feel like the poor got something over on them. They're afraid. Does, wow. I mean, are we going off into like that whole Robert Bly, Iron John kind of thing here, where we're talking about archetypal Jungian? Are they, is, does this all boil down, Reverbo, to a fear of death for these people? That they're afraid they're going to die and they might have been a nickel richer?
Maybe. Maybe you have one more Ferrari in your garage.
One more Ferrari and I'll live forever.
Yeah. Because listen to this. It does make sense in this crazy way. Because, I mean, look, logically, look at this. Logically, how do you reduce abortions? You reduce them by being pro-contraception, pro-sex education, right? Pro-family planning. So logically, people who hate abortion should be for those things.
Ah, but wait. There's a flaw in your reasoning. There's a flaw in your reasoning.
What's that?
At least with some of these. Because you got to remember that for instance, the pill, contraceptive pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. are referred to by some in that circle as silent abortions, as if a surgical one is preceded and followed and during with screaming.
There's some people that go way up.
That's why I've tried to explain on a number of occasions that when the anti-abortion the creepies are out there hollering about Roe v. Wade, what they're really hollering about is Griswold versus Connecticut. Because in order to overturn the right to privacy that underpins Roe v. Wade, you don't overturn the right to privacy in Roe v. Wade by overturning Roe v. Wade. Because the right to privacy was enunciated in Griswold versus Connecticut, which is about Connecticut's, it was a case about suing Connecticut because Connecticut wouldn't let women buy the pill. And when you realize that, then you realize that what they're after, and, you know, memo to the libertarians, memo to women, memo to men who buy condoms, you're attacking personal freedom. Okay? Not okay to you like you don't understand, but at its base level where those folks are concerned, it's about, you know, it's not about abortion, it's about compelling women to have babies, which is in turn about trying to turn the cultural clock back, Reverbo. They want a world that never existed. They want to live in this Ward and June Cleaver world, where all the women wear shirt-waisted A-line dresses and all the men wear charcoal-colored suits with skinny ties.
Oh, where you're heading is, they want to punish women for having sex.
Yes. Or they want to punish. They want to punish women for being sexual creatures.
Exactly.
Instead of passive receptacles. In other words, they want to. I guess we're just sort of drilling down and down and down and down here. They want to enshrine marital rape.
Yeah.
Because the creation of a child is the choice of the man, because the choice of the husband to have sex is solely his choice, and he can mount up any time he wants, and she can say nothing. And if God is blessing and smiling upon them, they will conceive a child which she will be compelled to carry to term, regardless of whether or not it kills her in the process.
Good grief, in some countries, baby girl, they just throw her in the dumpster when nobody's looking.
Or when they are.
Oh, yeah, it's just pathetic.
Or once she's 5 or 6 years old, they marry her to the 36-year-old pedophile. You know, it was maybe, 2 weeks ago, a story coming out of Yemen? A little girl who was maybe 11 years old and giving birth to the child of her 28-year-old husband?
God.
Died in childbirth?
You don't say.
And the parents of the little girl were, we are shocked. He promised us he would not have sex with her until she was of an appropriate age when we sold her to him for marriage.
Would that be 11?
Apparently it was. No, 10.
Man. Yeah, well, the Christians don't have not cornered the market on hypocrisy and lunacy. Well, okay, how about this? This is one just like that. You're so against universal health care. You're so against, right, having, you know, health care for all. Aren't healthy people more productive people?
Yes.
Aren't more productive people, aren't they liable to make you more money? But they don't go there either. They don't get that one either. Also, of course, the statistics are totally clear on this, that 98% of all women are on the pill at some point in their life. So all of this is...
Well, back up. We got to work through that one, too.
All right.
Yes, a healthy worker is a more productive worker, but if that worker is older, they need to die because the older worker has worked up a higher pay scale. So once the older worker dies, then they can hire in a younger, healthier worker at a lower rate of pay. All conservatism, Reverbo, at least in my opinion, and all conservatism eventually boils down to a yearning for cheap labor.
Yeah, I guess so. Damn, I knew there was some Twilight Zone reason why none of this ever happens. And then, of course, it's the basic, also the thing about if it is at all advantageous for the group of people they don't like, that's enough of a reason right there. We don't want them.
Employee free choice sailed right through the House. Deader than a stump in the Senate. Health care, no problem in the House. Deader than a stump in the Senate.
Well, if it wasn't for Kennedy, his tireless effort, you'd never get any. The minimum wage would still be $1.16.
You know, and why the minimum wage? Why don't we do what we did with cost of living for Social Security and just tie it to something, there's that word again, economic, so that the Senate can't turn it into a political football every, 30 years or so when we want to give a quarter of a raise to the working, a 25-cent raise to the working poor.
Yeah, 10 years too late.
No, the Senate has become a joke.
No, I should say, it's like a caricature. It's like a Warner Brothers cartoon caricature, these big, huge, pig-faced men.
I have an example, if you don't mind my sharing. I have an example of my thesis there that the Senate is a joke. You know, we have a new senator from Minnesota.
Yeah.
And he's a smart guy. He is scary geeky smart. He likes going over details. He's sharp. He's Al Franken.
He's Al Franken. You're not. Right.
Exactly. And there was a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee sometime back. And it was a hearing discussing the reauthorization of the Patriot Act of all things. And on that self-same Senate Judiciary Committee is the non-lawyer Al Franken. And he had some question and answer time, as is often, he's a senator, they get those.
Yeah.
And so he was questioning Assistant Attorney General David Criss about the provision that of the Patriot Act that allows what are called roving wiretaps. Remember roving wiretaps?
Yeah.
because, you know, it's just a sort of wiretap because you wanted to. The Washington Independent's Daphne Evitar reported that Senator Franken looked at Assistant Attorney General David Chris and read him the Fourth Amendment, where it says, no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. To see, when you've got a roving wiretap, you can't particularly describe much of anything. And, well, here's the audio is worth listening to.
Great. First, Mr. Chris, I'm not a lawyer, like my colleagues here now, nor a careful lawyer like you singled out.
All right. I'm going to be separate.
Okay.
For that
so,
one
but
for a while.
I did some research, and most Americans aren't lawyers. So I got a question on the roving wiretap thing, and I think I understand why it's important, because the terrorists and other people who suspect of being terrorists use different phones, right?
Yeah.
And, okay, and that's why it's there. But under the Patriot Act, the roving wiretap provision does not require law enforcement officials to identify the individual or the phone or the computer that will be tapped. Is that right?
No, I don't think so. The statute requires, roving or not, that the government provide the identity, if known, or a description of the specific target.
Description of it, but not the actual.
Not always the name, but you have to say something about the specific target.
Okay, well, that's what brings me to this, because they give you the.
Are you loving this so far, Reverbo?
Oh, I'm digging this.
You got to say something about the target, like he was wearing purple Chuck Taylor Converse.
Just something.
Say something about it. He's a nice guy. He's a terrorist. Yeah. But to continue.
When you get in the Senate, it's a constitution, and I was sworn to uphold it, or support it anyway, and protect it. It says, this is the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, it seems to me that's pretty explicit language, and I was wondering if you think that this is consistent with the Fourth Amendment.
I do think it is, and I kind of want to defer to that other third branch of government. The courts, in looking at...
I know what they are. Go ahead, sir.
It's surreal. The courts...
Did you catch that? This is surreal.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
an assistant U.S. attorney for the Obama administration thinks it's surreal to answer questions about whether or not the Patriot Act is in line with the Fourth Amendment, and I guess it's surreal, Reverbo, because it ain't. It's not in line. There's no way you can bring it into line. There's no way that saying, you know, the fellow that we saw last week carrying a briefcase with red tennis shoes, that's not the specificity that's contemplated within the Fourth Amendment. But the overarching reason that I brought this up is that that's the kind of business I'd like to see the Senate doing, is asking those kinds of honest, hard questions instead of Max Baucus saying, Max Baucus pretending that he doesn't have $15 million in his pocket from the healthcare industry, from the health insurance industry, from the pharmaceutical industry, paid to him to keep him from allowing healthcare to be extended to every American as a matter of right and not privilege. Does that make any sense at all?
I'm with you, Bob. That makes total sense. I thought once you got to the level of being a senator, that Those are the kind of questions you should be spending your time with. It seems obvious to me. Right, you shouldn't be, the Senate isn't brought to you by the Hartford.
No, it's brought to you by Carl's Jr., and we all know it.
Well, it's brought to you by me and you. I used to think, oh, I love Frank, and I also love, there seems to be a trend lately in how smug and patronizing people seem to be in front of Congress and the Senate. I mean, I just think, not only that, but also just simply not showing up for subpoenas. We all know how that works. But just this, like, you know, it's like, hey, Jack, you didn't happen to notice where you are? People just got to...
This is surreal.
Yeah. It's great. I love Frank, and I'm so glad he is a smart guy. I used to listen to his radio show all the time. It was,
you know, he made that little quip, and I'm glad that he injects a little bit of smart-ass levity once in a while. He made that little quip about, I'm not a lawyer, and I've checked, and most Americans aren't lawyers.
Yeah, I love that.
And you know the first thing I thought of was the epigram to To Kill a Mockingbird. A quote from Charles Lamb. Lawyers, I suppose, were children once.
I suppose.
Yeah. Not sure.
Not sure. Hey, in other news, Muammar Gaddafi was invited to the conference at the United Nations last week, and he decided to go native, kind of go Bedouin style or something, and he actually tried to set up a tent in Donald Trump's backyard. Did you hear about this?
No. Are you pulling my leg?
Why do I need to make any of this shit up? There's no need.
No, they're doing it. Okay, yeah, sure.
Gaddafi has something kind of issues with hotels and I don't know what.
Well, he's got this long-standing thing. You remember when, Ronald Reagan took out his vengeance for some terrorist attack, took out his vengeance by killing Gaddafi's baby daughter by dropping bombs on their tents in the desert. You know, Gaddafi likes tent living.
He does like tent living.
I'll bet you he gets the Cabela's catalog twice a year.
Oh, he's a total piece of work. But the great thing was that I don't think the communication on this wasn't all there. It wasn't very clear. And so there was a tent from the country of Libya with Gaddafi in it, in Donald Trump's backyard for a while until evidently they made him take the tent down. And there's no making this up. There's just no making this up. Oh, speaking of Ronald Reagan, and we're talking about go back to the bonus, you know, the salaries of these CEOs and these bonuses.
Yeah.
A real, real easy way of controlling all of this, of course, is with your tax system. You know, this doesn't need to get debated for years and rules and regulations and all this and people, I like it, I don't like it. All you got to do is have if you make more than $7 million, you pay 90%. Pretty much takes care of that problem. The way it was before Reagan showed up. Simple.
Elegant.
Taxes, that's what they're for, right? They're for redistribution of wealth. I mean, we're not stopping you from opening up another plant. We're not stopping you from buying more equipment, pumping money back into your business. But it does stop you from paying yourself a freakish amount of money and buying that 19th yacht, which is the whole point of this. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that in. It seems pretty simple.
Yeah.
Of course, when there, you know, the taxes on rich, when what's his name, the secretary, pays more taxes than he does, whoever I'm thinking of.
Oh, Warren Buffett.
Yeah, Warren Buffett. Anyway, I will...
The man who gave us There Is a Class War in America and My Side's Winning.
He's right. He's totally right. What do you call it?
Yes, 20.
The G20, I wanted to make a point of noting the spunk that those protesters show in Pittsburgh.
I was invited to be there, and I didn't have the guts.
These people will put their life on the line for the planet. Bob, these people, does the rest of the progressive movement is going to be paying attention to what to these guys?
I know.
The Coal River Mountain Watch, they know what it's all about.
Yeah, they do.
And the people who want to make sure that the Earth is going to be around for their grandkids, they sure as hell know what protesting is all about and what putting up a squawk is all about. I couldn't believe it. I just said, man.
Yeah, there's an element of, you know, we will not go quietly about all of this. Because there is a feeling whenever the G20 gets together, or the G8, or the, you know, G Avogadro's number, G Ma, I want to go home. There's a feeling there that we're not even the poor, the working class, we're not even on the radar.
There we're back at this. We're back to that. Well, yeah, trying to get people to agree on, that's nice. We'll finally have like a mandate for 35 miles to the gallon in the year 2016 or something. Oh, fine. This was, you know, 30 years later than the, I mean, yeah, it's trying to get health care through the Senate. It's just a joke. The world is brought to you by big business.
Yeah. And, you know, I wonder if at some point...
That's not going to accomplish anything.
No, it's not. And what has to happen? Ultimately, this is an existential question. What has to happen for us to take seriously what's going on with the planet? Because, you know, islands have disappeared in the Indian Ocean. You know, it's literally sunk beneath the wave. They're now reefs instead of islands. John was talking Sunday night about these massive dust clouds that are blowing from Asia and Australia. And, you know, dust clouds don't just happen. They happen because the vegetation has disappeared. They happen because there's nothing holding very fine soil down. And when the soil is gone, you know, you can't grow a crop on a rock.
No, you can't. Well, ask anybody who lives above the, I'm looking at my map here, anybody who is familiar with anything above the 60th parallel, just ask them about global warming.
Yeah.
And how that's affected their fishing and their livelihood. And, I mean, these people are it's tough to live up there when things are good. Oh, yeah. I mean, but see, it doesn't have anything to do with science. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that there's a point here.
Oh, well, I was going to say, we do.
They don't care. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
that cigarettes kill people. We just want to sell more cigarettes, so get out of the way.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we've got that whole dance with the devil in the pale moonlight thing going on because we get so much tax revenue from smoking cigarettes because we tax the cigarettes that people smoke. And we don't dare. On the one hand, we're saying, oh, quit smoking. It's bad for you. And on the other hand, some accountant somewhere is going, Jesus, what are you talking about? We'll go broke if they quit smoking.
We'll go broke if they find a cure for cancer and tell everybody about it. I mean, these used to be like conspiracy theories, but this is the way the world works. I'll leave you with this real sobering thought, if you want to just drill down to the bottom here.
Okay.
And this isn't exactly my original thought, but it doesn't matter. Everybody thinks about this and just wonders. You just wonder about it. So how do we get anything done? Well, you start thinking about, you know, how cool is America? You know, how cool is democracy? We have this, right, this nonviolent machinery for change. Right? On paper, that's how you get it done. You know, you elect your representative, and your representative votes for you because you can't be in Washington, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And we suddenly get laws that, you know, and things that help people. Nonviolently. Well, the problem is, think about this, though. Do you think we're going to get any progress or reform? Does any progress or reform take place until literally people start putting their lives on the line?
I don't know that they're going to be putting their lives on the line so much, Reverbo, as they are going to have their lives put on the line involuntarily. When what has been described periodically as the big die-off comes, and rich and poor alike begin dying in equal proportion, then maybe we'll get serious. The problem, however, lies in the fact that by then it will likely be too late. Again, going back to that thing that, Ken Burns, just worship at his shrine. When he's showing the footage, these places that I've always yearned to see, Chaco Canyon, Mesa Verde, these beautiful cliff dwellings, that were such magnificent emplacements of human habitation in what would appear to be an inhospitable place. You look at this and you go, well, Jesus, how could anybody live there? There's no trees. And then you go, oh, wait a minute. There were trees, weren't there? And they cut them all down. And when they cut them all down, all the soil went away. And when all the soil went away, that meant no more trees would grow. And look, the civilization died. And you go and you look, again, another place that I will never see but yearn to. When you go and you see the magnificent civilizations that grew up in the Mexican Isthmus, the waste of Mexico, and in the Yucatan Peninsula, and there's all this jungle and the lianas and everything growing around, just engulfing these pyramids and these stelae, and you go, Jesus, how could they not live here? And you go, wait a minute, where's the old growth? And you go, oh, they screwed the pooch, they screwed themselves right out of their own existence in paradise. And all of, these lessons, these freaking billboards with blinking neon lights are all around us, but standing in front of it is some godforsaken, corporatist, capitalist, anarcho-randian prophetist. Don't look! Don't look! It's all right! We got it all figured out! 35 miles a gallon's communism!
We don't need it. Don't worry. The ghost of the last recession is burned into our mind. We don't need any rules. It's okay. You can trust us.
Bye.
Hey, whether or not we lie down on the railroad tracks for the cause, or whether or not throw us in front of the train, we're screwing the pooch. I almost think it's splitting hairs how you do it. But when you think of all the things that we think are good, like unions and Social Security and civil rights, Bob, there's blood on every one of those things.
Sure.
Until there was, it wasn't happening.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but and then I see people, you know, basically putting their lives on the line for the environment. I don't know. I'm just starting to wonder.
Well, again, I would take a little bit of issue with you, Reverbo. They're not putting their lives on the line for the environment. They're putting their lives on the line for the continuation of the human species. Because, frankly, one way or another, I don't want to draw anybody's ire on this. The mountains they've blown up around here, 500 and counting, the miles and miles of streams that they have buried are not coming back. But nature will find a way to fill in the gaps, even if it does so poorly. But it will do that as nature will do that as best it can. But it may do so in such a way that human habitation is not possible. So really, and I really would like to engage in a discussion of environmentalism and recast it, as I have tried to do, as a matter of human rights, as a human rights campaign.
Well, I think I love your analogies. You can just go back and look at what happened when these horrible, foolish, or whatever, deleterious results from screwing up nature. Yeah, civilizations vanish.
And it tends to make mistakes when it stops thinking, and just takes this eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die attitude. the greatest, and again, anybody who wants to engage in some deep navel gazing about this, I heartily urge to pick up a copy of Jared Diamond's Collapse. The poster child for all of this is the island that some people know as Easter Island, but the is properly known as Rapa Nui. You look at it, go look at it on Google Earth. There ain't a tree on it. How'd people live here without any trees? Oh, wait a minute, there were trees. And it was only when there weren't trees anymore that there stopped being people.
But we know that now. This is what drives you so crazy. You can look at a science book. Now, I'm starting to sound like you. I'm starting to grit my teeth when I talk. You can just look this up as late as like yesterday. You can learn how to stay alive. You can learn how to be a good
citizen. Yeah, but Reverbo arrayed against this is that Confederacy of Dunces that John Donne identified.
Yeah.
And toward that end, let me present you with the Orwellian moment of the week. It was back about a month ago that the United States Chamber of Commerce, via its, senior vice president William Kovacs, called for the Scopes Monkey trial of the 21st century to put the science of climate change on trial. Okay? They literally called for a trial to be able to gain, nothing more than gainsaying real live, honest to God scientists who say that, we're screwing up the planet. Well, today, the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a guy named Tom Donahue, not to be confused with that freak Bill Donahue of the Catholic League, but a freak nonetheless, Tom Donahue, issued a statement saying, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce continues to support strong federal legislation and a binding international agreement to reduce carbon emissions and address climate change. And then their spokesman, a guy named Eric Wurtschlegel, I know, said, well, we've never questioned the science behind global warming. Dr. Orwell, courtesy phone, Dr. Orwell, courtesy phone.
Your hot dog is ready.
Reverbo, make it personal, yeah. Brother.
It's personal whether you make it that way or not.
Yeah, they'll make it personal for you.
Oh, God. So do you want to throw yourself under the train, or you want them to push you? By the way, you think you just picked up that old flu accidentally, or somebody sent it to you? Just asking.
No, I think it was entirely accidental. Well, no, I don't. No, I don't think it was accidental. I mean, I got it, but I don't think it was accidental. I think it was deliberately, it's one of those lie hop things. It was allowed to incubate and stew in those fetid, massive pits in Mexico, that support the quarterly profit and loss sheet of Smithfield Meats, Inc.
I love the whole idea, though, a third radio network attacked by swine flu virus. Terrorism suspected.
Not as savage as
sending anthrax to Tom Brokaw or whatever they did, or to Tom Daschle, but I mean,
somebody emailed me some swine flu. Yeah.
It's a great headline. All right.
All right.
Later, my friend.
Later, Reverbo. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Oh, wait. Sorry. See, I told you I'm not entirely over it. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
So that's what happened to you. Well, I'm glad that you survived. That sounded...
Well, I still smell a little bit like bacon. And I've got this profound urge to rub myself down with tomatoes and lettuce.
Oh, God. I couldn't believe what you were saying yesterday, you made a good point about if this is such a horrible, you know, epidemic or pandemic, you know, why are they charging folks $25, $30? You know what I mean?
You would think that there would be a, let's see, what's the word I'm looking for, Sandra? National security interest in immunizing the population.
No, so it just that also speaks to there's something amiss with this, because how are you going to say, oh, give us $25, but it's an emergency and you must get the vaccination? It's a function of this horrible health care, like you said. But
well, that sounds a little bit like the Baucus plan, doesn't it?
Well, that's another thing. I'm like, so they, you know, fought off bravely the public option today.
Political heroes, aren't they?
And it's just sort of like, and I keep seeing these surveys. I mean, people are not paying attention to the right-wing stories because there's so much with the reality of, you know, rising costs with no mechanism for controlling the cost. So they want a public option. The noise machine isn't, you know, making a difference. But they're doing their damnedest to stop it. I don't, you know, I'm not too sure how I feel about if it's going to, if there's something public is going to happen or not. But I tell you, there's a lot of people out there who are like.
Oh, by the way, for the, just to add to your run screaming around the room factor, Sandra, I'm informed by John Fox in the chat room that Australia began free vaccinations for everybody today, 21 million doses free.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, this isn't the same. I mean, I still, I'm not gonna take that shot. I'm sorry. I don't, quaalines and adjuncts or whatever, all the other stuff that's in there, that's okay. I don't know what the hell it is. They're offering it free at the university where I'm at.
Oh, wait, so the swine flu vaccination's free? But the regular vaccination is $25 or $30.
Right, unless you're in some sort of organization at California, you know, university system, I guess it's available. Or it will be available next month.
But, you know, the thing is, you mentioned the spiraling, the up-spiraling, exponential spiraling of cost, Sandra. And the thing is, though, I don't have the skill set to enunciate this. This is my problem. We keep saying that healthcare costs are, you know, 100%, 300%, 500%, and gonna be.
Oh yeah.
You know, these are numbers that should be horrifying, and they are.
Well, they went up 129% in the last decade alone. 129%.
Right, but the thing is, that is only pain that is felt on the payout end, because the health, the insurance companies and the healthcare companies and the pharmaceutical companies continue to declare these massive profits. So it doesn't matter to them if it goes up 1,000% in the last decade.
Well,
do you
no.
see what I'm saying? Because the numbers are real, and I guess the way I'm trying to describe it, no, the numbers are real for the working people carrying this system on their backs. The numbers are very real, very painful, and very out of pocket. But for the people reaping the profits and the benefits of it, it's a walk through the candy store.
Oh yeah, no, exactly.
You know, we talk about wealth redistribution. This is pain redistribution.
Yeah, no, and you know, distribution is the key word in this. Because the whole idea of them trying to reform a system like this without any, I mean absolutely no cost control mechanism is almost criminal. That's why I keep coming to this expanding market share without any control of cost equals happy insurance companies. I mean, I can't make it any plainer than that.
And with it, you know, with, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of like got the neon flashing lights around it. What, who's standing in front of the lights? Why is this such a difficult concept maybe not for the American people, but the American people's elected representatives? Why is it such a difficult concept for them to grasp?
Well, No, and also, it's, you know, it's going to go, you know, it's going to go in this sort of, I don't want to say oligarchy, but more monopolistic, too, because the insurers are sort of consolidating. So you're going to have less companies after this reform.
Right, and from an economic standpoint, and I trust you more on this than I trust myself, but from an economic standpoint, isn't that a devolution from a demand economy to a command economy when you've got that kind of corporate consolidation?
Yeah, but it's a kind of command. It's a monopolistic. When you're talking about the market system that we have, you know, command, you know, monopoly, you know what I mean? They're almost interchangeable. And we don't use the word command, you know, it's a dirty word. But there's planning.
Well, that's because command and communist both begin with the first four letters, right?
Right, but there's planning at every level, especially when you talk about the size of the corporations we're talking about. They're planning with the government. That's why
Wait, wouldn't that be fascism?
Right, and I know we use that word all the time, but listen, you have to call a spade, right?
Well, we use the word air when we talk about what we breathe because... So, I mean, it's natural that we would use fascism when we talk about what we're looking at.
Yeah, no, once again...
I mean, you can call it goldfish, but it's fascism.
No, it's, you know, but it's interesting because the public seems to be not interested in the healthcare bills that are coming forth because they know that they need some mechanism to control the industry. That's the whole point of it, you know?
Well, you know, one of the things that's being pointed out here, I'm looking in the chat room, and Lottie, who has worked in the industry, Lottie points out, he says, in my experience, most biotech companies run very close to bankruptcy, but their corporate staff is skimming the maximum amount of cash they can off the top, which I guess, of course, doubles back and explains why they run very close to bankruptcy.
Well, it's also, that's the same thing with the, you know, you have the iron rule in economics when productivity increases, you know, your wages are supposed to go up. But oopsie, we've had stagnant wages for decades, which means that the profit is being squeezed.
Yeah, that's not
elsewhere.
Right, that's not an iron rule anymore. That's more like silly putty.
Well, you know what I'm saying, but this is what you're told in school. And
right.
I'm looking, like, what are you talking about, you know? Obviously, the productivity of the worker is now being in the profit for the employer.
Well, doesn't that sort of presuppose that the dice ain't loaded?
Oh, God.
I mean, that reminds me, you know, bless his heart, I haven't heard from him in a while. I need to check in, see if he's okay. Joe Vecchio used to say that worker productivity were two words that drove him absolutely crazy, made him scream, because every time he heard that, he knew that somebody somewhere was working harder and getting less.
Yeah, well, no, and then they have you thinking that, oh, no, we're only talking about short, you know, short-term, blah-de-blah-de-blah, over the long-term, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, so, we'll make it up to you later.
Right, that's the, you know, and that's the standard.
Isn't that the check is in the mail?
Yeah, business cycle gibberish, you know. But another thing I noticed, if we're talking about economics, is that, ooh, they were surprised that the consumer confidence fell. Ooh, it's not supposed to be falling. We're in recovery. That's the type of media we have. They're surprised. At the same time, you look at Time magazine, it's saying, oh, what can Americans do with double-digit unemployment is here to stay. Did you see that cover?
Yeah, I did.
I'm like...
Yeah, the here to stay part was rather sobering.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like, okay, so now we are 300 million people who are supposed to accept this drastic cut in living standards and watch even more of collective tax dollars be siphoned off to God knows who. Maybe that's why Roman Polanski getting shipped over here.
Oh, for God's sakes, I know.
They're probably trying to keep from revealing some rich people, so they use that fool. Who've been traveling around the world for years. How come he getting arrested now, Bob? Come the fuck on. I'm sorry.
No. That's okay. I mean, if only Henry Kissinger had been traveling with him.
Shut up. That's what I'm saying. It's like the whole thing is just so, it's like Switzerland is, as someone said, is turning into the U.S.'s bitch, man. Like Israel.
Yeah, well, you mean like when we tell they've had a banking system that's worked fine for them for years, and we finally said, nah, yeah.
Exactly.
What did we do? Did we put a horse in Switzerland's horse's head in Switzerland's bed? I don't know.
Well, no, you know, a good $5 billion of that tarp found its way in Switzerland.
Oh, we bought them.
But you know, some of that money went to bail out USB or you know, hide your money, bumfuck bank. I mean, who knows what it is? But they actually got bailed out. So you know, maybe this is a new alliance.
Oh, I know, and I was wandering around in the for-profit media, Sandra, and I noticed that among the top headlines today was a video of a spider crawling on the Pope.
Shut the hell up. Did it bite him?
No, it just crawled all over him while he was speaking and kept crawling all over him even as he walked away, and it was news. Spider crawls on Pope, doesn't bite. You know, professional courtesy, I guess. What?
God, are you kidding me with that?
No, I'm not. No. The Jeannie Most at CNN had a whole stupid package that went on at length and gave slow-mo with shadow highlight of the spider crawling on the Pope's white robes.
She's still employed?
Apparently.
God help us. Wow.
I mean, she's been doing those kitschy sort of kicker pieces since I was there.
Yeah. Oh, well, no.
And, you know, we're talking 1987 at this point.
No, I know she's been around for a while. I just... You know, you hope that things will just sort of drift away, but they don't seem to.
But that's the news. I mean,
well, no, but the Roman Polanski thing is, you know, that's like hilarious because the poor chick who's the victim, she's like, God, you know.
Well, yeah, and they got somebody coming out. I saw some news story saying, well, you know, the some woman coming out. Well, I dug it. Huh. But, you know, there's news stories out there. I don't know how much of the honest to Jesus right wing media you catch. But, if you look over at the Horn website, you will find, a posting that Sue and the Ranting Keyboard did about the difference between two terrorism cases, that are presently, under discussion in the Republic. And it's fascinating. And I gotta see if I can call this up here real quick because I hung on to it hoping to, deal with it sometime last week.
Are these in court?
Well, they are kinda. Let me see if I can get Sue to send me the link because I this is one of those, I actually thought of you when I was reading this because I thought, you know, Sandra's gonna have a fit.
We've had a slew of them, you know, in the last month. All of a sudden, you know, they're, you know, doing these domestic, I don't know what they're doing, finding them under every rock.
Well, this is kind of a mind blower because it's one of those where you really can't get around the racial divide on it. Ah, here it is. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, she is so fast. The right wing is going absolutely crazy, and I saw mention of it earlier today. The case that the right wing's going bananas about is of a man by the name of Zazi. Najibullah Zazi. And they're showing his scary Middle Eastern picture and his scary Middle Eastern beard. And he's been accused by law enforcement of possessing bomb-making instructions. They have video from the store counter showing him buying stuff that you could use to make a bomb.
Sally's a hair shop.
Yeah.
The hair. Yeah, I saw that.
Right. You know, and they say that he's attended an Al Qaeda training facility in Pakistan, and they wanted to detonate bombs inside the United States, and they want him held without bail until trial.
Al CIA, I've taken.
Right, right. So there's the bit, but oddly enough, there's just not a hell of a lot of evidence. Then there's the what Sue refers to as the Gang of Five, whom you haven't heard about.
Are these some darkies?
Oh, no.
Oh, there's more Middle Eastern people?
No. They are five individuals, five males, arrested in New York State this month. And they are, by name, James Pincher, Jeffrey Robert, Michael Robert, Seth Pincher, and Tyson Pincher. Okay? Here's what they've been accused of. They've been accused of possessing bomb-making instructions. And they also claim to have a videotape, the authorities do, shot by the Gang of Five themselves, that shows them detonating a bomb inside the United States. Blowing up a turtle. Okay?
I know that's cruelty. I'm sorry to laugh.
Right, there was a sawed-off shotgun taken when they were arrested. Those are quite illegal. They were in possession of bottles of chloroform. Okay? They have not been charged as domestic terrorists, Sandra.
They possess
bomb-making instructions. They possess bombs themselves. There's video of them exploding a bomb. They possess illegal weapons and chloroform. They've not been charged with domestic terrorism.
Okay.
Five white guys.
Why not, though? I don't understand. They charge you if you look crooked these days.
Five white guys.
What's the hold? Oh, because they're...
white guys. Guys. Five white guys.
God, it's so... It wasn't so predictable. You know, it's outrageous.
Now, they were charged with torturing an animal. And Mr. Zazi is being asked to be held without bail, right? Because we've got videotape of him at Sally Beauty Supply.
That means...
So you would think that the Gang of Five would be held without bail too, right? I mean, they were caught blowing stuff up, even if it was a turtle.
But they're back home in their mother's basement?
Their bail was set between $25,000 and
$50,000. They have higher bail from crap dealers than that. What?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so what is this exercise in?
Racism? I wish Reverbo was here. He could ring his little bell for us.
Oh. Wow, and this is, didn't they just have those people in Buffalo that they sentenced to forever?
Yeah.
And they didn't, what did they do?
Not much.
They just thought of shooting up a base, isn't that right? Or am I?
Yeah. Were those the guys who were going to deliver the terrorist pizza?
It was real flimsy. Whatever it was weak as can be. But in light of all this, don't forget though, Chicago, gonna get that Olympics.
I talked a little bit with Ben Birch about that, and Ben thinks of God the same way I do. But I think Ben is openly praying now that Chicago doesn't get the Olympics.
No, I'm about to say, because I tell you what, the minority communities in Chicago are scared to death of the idea of Olympics coming there because they are doing their best to wipe out what's left.
And I am proud to say that Coal River Mountain Watch has been a part of some of that effort lately. I think it's called the Village or the Eco Village. I'm trying to remember. Our buddy Parson Brown could tell me. Our friend Lorella Scarborough has been out there working with those folks talking about why coal is bad and why coal-fired energy is bad for the area, and they continue to tie that in with the Olympics. They had a thing where they had people competing in, and this was a year or so ago. I need Parson to explain it better. They had folks running races with gas masks on because of the manifest pollution of the, but then again, we had an Olympiad in Beijing. I mean, I'm surprised that the people who competed there are still alive.
Right. No, I mean, that was so bad they had to, because it's a totalitarian government, they decided, oh, you can't drive for 2 weeks beforehand to clear the air. I don't know, I just can't get past that. I'm like, wow, the state actually stopped vehicles from...
I know.
It's just really mind-blowing. But the Chicago thing, I mean, I'm sure there is some economic benefits, but it seems like there's already organizations to stop it because of, who is going to be effed over as usual,
Yeah, and that's the sad part of it, as usual.
So they're apparently destroying, they're going to destroy housing in order to build, you know, tracks or, you know what I mean, Olympic housing.
Oh, you got to have your Olympic Village.
You know, but I thought it was just Michelle going, so Obama decided, oh, no, he has to go too.
Yeah, and, of course, the right wing is screaming now that he's abandoning his post.
Oh, well.
And that, you know, our war on terror will be compromised because Barack Obama's going to Copenhagen for 18 hours.
Oh, instead of sending more troops to Sweden and without any sort of time to make a decision.
Honest to God, there's a wingnut out there. I forget who this clown was, but he was arguing that by working on health care, we're endangering our troops.
Yeah, well, everything endangers the troops. But in the meanwhile, I have to mention them old conservative pigs dropping like flies. First it was Irvin Kristol. Goodbye, MF-er, and William Sapphire. Goodbye.
That's one of the. I saw that the Sapphire had died, and I thought, God, I thought he died years ago.
No, whatever. He's gone, you know, a little bit more light.
Yeah, he used to write that pissy little on language column. Remember that?
Yeah, he was just like, he made me sick back in the day when I didn't even have any kind of, you know, political efficacy. I still hated him then. And then that. William Kristol's father, he bit it the other day.
Now, that I didn't know.
Yeah, goodbye. You know. And it's just disgusting because Irvin Kristol is the one that actually contributes to the movement. His sort of mealy-mouthed son is just one of those people who was just born lucky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, born on third thinking he hit a triple. Is that what we're talking about?
What contribution does that pig make? Nothing. He's horrible.
None.
I look at him and I think, you know what? Why don't you drop dead too? I don't know what to say about his father, but at least his father has some sort of, you know, credential. But William Kristol is just hideous.
But what you're describing, Sandra, is my, you know, my objection about a whole bunch of. At this, you know, we've got an entire subculture of wealth in this country that have turned into, you know, what Jesus said about the lilies of the field. They neither tarry nor do they sow.
Ew. Yeah, no, that's why I was...
I guess they're those lilies that smell like a corpse that only bloom every 15 years or whatever.
Oh, shoot. They have that one plant in England. That's right. Yuck. No, these people are disgusting. And all those Kagan family, them another group of people who are just like...
Oh, and, you know, I've been wondering, is that really creepy woman that was in the Defense Department, is she part of those Kagans?
If she's a... Yeah, I'm telling you. They're like cockroaches. They're really the elite, you know, and it's so many of them. It's like, dude, you know.
Well, I remember, and I can't remember exactly what she said, but she was like... Under Secretary of Defense for screwing brown people or something.
She said
something really obnoxious a few years ago, and then we got the photograph, and the entire Horn family just looked at the photograph and went, oh! It was like something out of Mike Myers, you know, where that's a man, baby.
Yeah, they're like out of that Gene Kirkpatrick, you know, that lot. She's like the granddaddy of, oops, I mean, the grandmother of them. You know what I'm saying?
That was not an oops, and you know it.
Yeah, it's them people. Those people are scary, and they just continue. So it's a generation after generation. I don't know. Anyway, sorry. I've had to read a lot of that stuff. That's why I'm like, these people are freaks. They're crazy.
And as is often the case with crazy people, they endanger the lives of people not even around them, but, you know, far downstream from them.
No, you know, their policies are forever enacted, praised, utilized, implemented. This is the thing. That's why they're really frightening. But, anyway, I didn't even mean to go. It's just that sort of foreign policy establishment. They just really don't go away. They get quieter, but they're still there, you know.
Well, and because they're still being bred in that same cesspool, you know, the that same sort of Yale confraternity that gave us the Dulles brothers.
Yeah. Oh, you know. Yeah. You know, I'm in the process of reading that book on intelligence that he wrote. Good Lord.
Makes your head hurt, doesn't it?
Especially when you have to come up with some sort of paper for it. But anyway, blah, blah, blah.
How's classes going, Professor?
Oh, God. That is just doing my head in because the opinions are just, I mean, these young people think that we're doing good work in Afghanistan and whatnot. And I'm just sort of like, wow. And I, you know, I have to keep it mum because I can't express the bias.
Oh, no, because then David Horowitz will land on you like a house.
Oh, shit. I'm really not on the radar. I'm just being facetious. But it's kind of, it's interesting. My little adjunct class, they're sort of being swayed. I can't help it.
Well, I wouldn't expect you to. I had I wanted to share something with you before you go.
Oh, okay.
This came from Joe the Foxhole Atheist. And he said this is a speech that he gave to his class. And so from one educator to another, with me as the intermediary. This is a beautiful thing. He says, "My goal today is to make you change the way you see the world you live in. I know too much about human nature to believe I can change your mind about anything, so I'm not going to try. What I'm going to try is to offend and shock you so much that you educate yourself. I want you to feel so disgusted about the truths that I'm about to tell you that you leave here today with a need to find out for yourself if what I say is real. For if you do this, if you go to the sources yourself, I know you'll change your own mind on your own. Before I reveal the true nature of the society we live in, I must first share with you some experiences. I was a soldier. During my time in the Army, I was sent to two combat zones. In a combat zone, it was my job to determine who needed to die and to execute them. I have kicked in doors and destroyed houses. I've marched civilians out of their homes at gunpoint. I lost count of the people I stared in the eye with my barrel on their chest, my finger on the trigger ready to fire if they so much as breathed the wrong way. In Kosovo, I remember one mission as if it happened yesterday. We were searching a large village for weapons. In one house, there was an old man who refused to leave his home. My team leader was scared and losing control of the situation. I placed my barrel on the old man's chest and moved my safety switch to fire. I stared him in the eyes until he understood who I was. I was death, his family's death. After a brief second of eternity, he understood and surrendered. During a year and a half of this, I learned one thing. There's nothing good or noble in the wars we vote for. There's nothing good or noble in killing grandparents, mothers, and children. In Iraq alone, I killed over 100,000 civilians, and so did you. When I came home, I had to know why I was sent overseas to kill innocent people." He says, "Now it's time to learn how and why we Americans are killing people all over the world, and it all starts with money. The U.S. and now the world economy is a fractional reserve system. This means that our entire society is just one big pyramid of debt. Here's how it works." He goes on too much to read. I'm going to pass this over to Sue for her to post on the website. But I thought of you when I was reading this, thinking, wow, this idea that we're living on a pyramid of debt.
You really can't dispute that. I mean, and if you have any understanding of, fractional systems, yeah, it's pretty scary. But, no, that was being said to, some students?
Yeah.
Wow.
And
I can't even get my ones to appreciate the wall of separation and the estrangement clause.
You're kidding.
Well, it's just because it's such a wonderful part of the Constitution. But it's been so brutalized, and the result is these people who actually think that, they don't understand it,
Well, and it's a couple of generations of right-wing theocrats screaming, "It says freedom of religion, not freedom from religion." Everybody's free to have a religion, but you got to have a religion.
No, and it's amazing how well it's worked, because these students now really don't, they can't really appreciate what.
So where you are, without giving anything away, where you are you having some, some wingnut talking points coming back at you?
Yeah, sure. But yeah, of course. I mean, that's what you fight against.
That's one of those where you just take one of those Surettes with the Thorazine and just right into the thick part of the muscle and you.
Well, even the clear and simple writings of Madison can't seem to get through these fools, but That's for another day. I'll let you go.
All right. Take care, Sandra. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Later. And that is how you transform a country. Repeat the big lie enough, and it becomes the truth. It's just like that that business from last night with, what's her name, Kitty Wirthman, who says that Hitler was a communist, a socialist, even though he was a fascist. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Onward we go. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
I win. Everyone get off the phone. I'm the last caller.
You are. What's up, David?
Yeah. I just wanted to say one thing about the whole healthcare and the whole issue of that is the fact that it goes back to this, Bob. Most of America has to realize this, and I hope people listening understand this as well. The work has not been done in this country for us to get universal health care. And what I mean by that is the sacrifices have not been made. I know a lot of people read blogs and they look at the op-eds, but the percentage of people in this country, they haven't made that sacrifice. And what I mean is, metaphorically, if their HDTV plasma screen is still hanging on the wall, the sacrifice hasn't been made. And that's what I mean by that. And it's all across this country. And what's even crazier is I have people. I'll give you an example. I was at an auction. I was told the previous week that someone came in, and he had to have this. He had to have this bottle. He went 200, 300, 400, 500. He just did. He kept going. You were not going to get it. He got it for $2,000. He decides to go sell it on eBay. He can't sell it for the price that he wants. This guy is known for being in debt of over $20,000 on his credit card. My point is the sacrifice is not made. Everything that's happening right now, most people are not giving up their creature comforts. And I want people to understand that. That includes the poor. That includes everybody on my street. 90%, 95% are in that bracket. The people listening, it's good that you think that, but really, I'm telling you seriously, there are people who live less than me, who have better shoes. The conditioning in this country is insane. And until the sacrifice is made, we are not going to have universal health care. That's why when Reverbal says take it personal, most of America can't take it personal, because they haven't made the sacrifice. That TV still remains on. Their DVDs are still flowing. Their refrigerator up with all kinds of liquor. Everything is full. All creature comforts are met. And that is why where we are at, people. It's not because of the right wing. It's because we keep getting centered back to these creature comforts, and we never give it a second thought.
And so we're anesthetized then. That's your argument?
Way past that, Bob. I can give you proof after proof, fact after fact. You can go across and look at any sector in my city, the poorest of the poor, and they have more stuff than me, for God's sakes. Nobody listens of the value of saving, of investing. None of this shit. They just keep on buying and buying and buying and consumption. Consumption is our slave. I don't care how liberal you think someone is. The percentage is, the chances are that person is spending like a dog on bullshit. And that's the problem. It is like crack. I'm sorry. That's why we don't have universal health care. We need to fess up to that. We don't have it because we have four or five plasma screens in a house. We don't have it because people who have babies are told, indoctrinated, and said, you know what? You need a house. You need a house. You can't live in an apartment. I know you only have one baby, so why don't you skip that step and get that fucking house? That's the problem. It's all of this. It's all this accumulation. And until we sit down and realize that the sacrifices haven't been made, that's what I want.
Well, you are indicting the material culture, and you have a very valid point. But at some point in time, what I'm asking is, are you saying that people are not demanding it because they are comfortable, or, I mean, what?
Most people are stupid, and they're not deserving of that universal health care. They haven't made that sacrifice. That's what I'm saying.
But I want to ask about the sacrifice, because I'm operating from a premise, David, that basic health care is a human right and not a privilege.
Most people have wasted this society. It's time to learn that. The ideological lens eventually has to come off, Bob. It does for everyone. I want people to realize, I just read a story, Bob, that someone is suing Kellogg's, be mad that fruit was in Fruit Loops. That's how idiotic our country is. It's not a joke, people. It's a real headline. They're going to sue Kellogg's because there isn't fruit in Fruit Loops. Take that one to the bank.
Consumer fraud.
No, Bob, before I get out of here, this is our country, and people have to realize. And that's why when I hear a verbal say, take it personal, most people don't deserve the right to take it personal because they're so inundated with creature comforts, with spoilers, with everything. They expect the McMansion right in front of their house. Understand that. That's why we don't have universal health care. We went to the casino. We went to that table and we said, oh, wow, blackjack, this looks really great to play. I think I'm going to sit down and play me a hand. Oh, wow, I've got a plasma TV. Oh, I need a bigger one now. I need another plasma TV. I need another HD. Oh,
what I think you're describing is the mesmerization that comes with the consumer culture. I wish we had a little more time to flesh through this.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, universal health care is not free. It's not going to be free. We are all going to pay for it. And we'll pay for it in our taxes. But there has been, you know, the other side has been very, very successful in saying, well, it's going to cost too much. Well, Jesus, we spend what, $10 billion a month in Iraq? I mean, you want to talk about plasma TVs and, you know, they're not out of their comfort zone or anything. Well, you know, we spend the cost of the entire health care bill in Iraq in a month.
And that's part of the problem as well. Everything you're saying is a factor, but what I'm saying basically is that the sacrifice isn't there. People need to understand that. Sorry, it's true. The sacrifice isn't there. That's all.
What sacrifice? I mean, I want to get a handle on a definition here, David. What sacrifice are you calling for?
I'm talking about they have to get involved, they have to get aware, they have to get focused, and they have to stop spending. I don't care what anyone says when someone says spending is down. Not where I live, spending continues.
It's who's spending and how much.
But what I'm saying is it's spending through the roof, and people are living well beyond their means. That's the facts.
That's the credit card culture.
I know.
I mean, our national savings rate is at a negative. You know, we used to compare our savings rate with the Japanese, and the Japanese had like a 7% savings rate, and we had a 2%. We're in negative numbers now. We are actively anti-saving.
And we're not going to get universal health care until we cut that off. It's that simple.
But what's the... Oh, dear. We are running out of time. But what's the nexus between the two things, David? Between consumer spending and health care. I mean,
it all ties together, Bob.
I'm trying to figure out how it ties together. Because I can understand a nexus between, son of a bitch in the Congress saying, well, you know, we're endangering the troops because we're talking about health care. Yeah, that's BS. But the fact of the matter is, we made a political judgment that we would go in hoc to blow up a million brown people, but we will not go in hoc to save the lives of 20,000 people a year.
Spending time on frivolous things that we have spent and are spending our time and energy on such distractions, we need to understand that most of America is not on board with us. I know the media likes to think that so many people are revved up for universal health care, but that's not the truth. Most people are sitting down at home watching their big screen TV.
Well, they are, but at the same time, you know, the numbers are what the numbers are. 70-80% of the American people support, to one degree or another, some kind of public option. You know, now most people are not immersed in the issue enough to say, you know, I believe that we need to do H.R. 676, we need to do Medicare for All, because most people don't get involved in issues to the degree that we get involved in issues here.
I'll tell you what, Bob, since we're out of time, we'll flesh it out tomorrow, but I'm telling you, it's that deep. America needs to understand that there has to be more of a sacrifice.
Well, let me just give you an example. This comes from Cindy out in the Northwest.
Yeah.
She says, I don't buy what David's saying. I gave up creature comforts years ago. I bought myself a new coat last year. I spent $90 for it. That's the first coat I've ever bought myself. I've been wearing jackets from the Goodwill. I haven't had a new pair of shoes in 5 years. I haven't had new pants, shirts, bras, underwear more than 5 years. I don't go to the hairdresser. I don't have pay TV. I can't even support the radio show I love. About the sacrifice, Americans have bought the lies from the corporations and have sacrificed their financial stability and their income increases for 40 years. We're screwed. Any judge with sense would, and she says any judge with any sense will throw out the Fruit Loop case, which is probably true.
But see, she's an anomaly. And I don't say that with any malice or whatsoever. She's an anomaly. She's Bigfoot. Sorry, that's the truth. Most of America is not focusing on this. I can guarantee you that. And I'll leave it at that.
And then the question comes around. Maybe we'll work on it tomorrow. Of what it takes to get America to focus its little ADD self on real priorities. David, good call. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Later. Thanks. Bye now. Sounds like we've got an issue to work on here. Thanks everybody. That's the program tomorrow night. I hope I'll be here. Hope you'll be here. No reason to think that I won't. A minute before 9, stick around for Mike Malloy over on his website, or if you listen on terrestrial radio, that's fine too. And again, a hearty welcome to everybody who listens in to this show, replayed after Malloy's on his stream. Thanks, of course, as always, to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, now, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Good to be back in the seat here in the studio, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. Yes, it is good to be with you here today. I got a couple of guests coming up a little later on. We're going to have David Swanson. Congratulations to David. I know David, and I know he's thrilled with the success of his new book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and the Forming of a More Perfect Union. Congratulations to David on that book. And we're also going to have David Nybert, Weigel with us. Almost confused him with our friend Dave Nybert over at Crooks and Liars. The Washington Independent did a big story on that fabulous How to Take Back America conference. That took, my God, that had to be something out of Star Trek or something. Woo! Anyway, we'll talk about that just a little bit later. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us on the program here, we'll have lines open all day long, except when we have our guest on. 866-546-5254. It's a toll-free number. And, well, you'd just be crazy if you didn't call in and talk for a while and make yourself nationally famous, huh? Yeah. Because we are streaming all across the country and all around the world. I want to make good on a promise that I made somebody. I do want to make good on a promise. You may hear the Guy James today that maybe a little rough around the edges, if you know what I mean. I have moods like everybody else, and when I get screwed by somebody that's in the business world, I like to let them know about it. I like to let them know that I'm going to let the public know about it. So I'd like to say hello to all those thieving sons of bitches, particularly the manager, Leon, down in Galliano Chrysler Dodge Jeep in Fort Myers, Florida. Yes, I would. The guy's an unreasonable thief, tried to screw me really good, did screw me really good, and I wanted to let all the public know that I wouldn't buy a car, I wouldn't go near Galliano Chrysler Dodge Jeep in Fort Myers, Florida, under any circumstances ever, and I will warn any of you that are listening in the area to stay away from them crooked bastards, especially the general manager named Leon. So there, I promised Leon I would say that, and he didn't take me seriously, and I promise I'll probably say it again throughout the day today and send Leon a clip of it. Leon, there's an old saying that if you fuck with a truck, you get run over. Yeah, and so, Leon, I'm going to do my best. Guy tried to charge me $1,150 for an auto repair job, but I ended up getting done for $260. And then had him stand there and swear to me how he's being so honest with me. So we'll see. We're going to talk about credit cards a little later on in the program today. We will do that. We plan on talking about credit cards. Also, I want to talk about how the Guy James Show is now on the endangered species list. The end is definitely near unless we find some funding somewhere very, very quickly somewhere, and I don't know where that'll be. Really, I'm finally at the end of my rope trying to find funding for the program. So we are officially on the endangered species list. I think many of you already knew that. Things of note around the country today before we get to David Swanson. David will be coming up in just about 10 minutes, 9 minutes, something like that. Afghanistan's in the news today. The president is being advised by McChrystal to send at least, 35,000 more troops to Afghanistan. My advice to President Obama, if he would ask for my advice, and he's going to get my advice whether he wants it or not, leave. Leave. Leave now. Don't wait till tomorrow. Start packing today. Get every American man, woman, and child out of that godforsaken place now while you still can. Remember what happened in Vietnam. Most recently, remember what happened in Iraq. Remember what happened when we got to fooling around where we shouldn't have, and what happened during Reagan's watch in all of a sudden I can't think of the city in Jordan. So remember all those things. And get out. Get out of Afghanistan. Get out right now. Don't send one more of our precious American soldiers into that godforsaken place. Take a look at history. See what's happened to every invading army that ever took over that place. Get the hell out. Please, Mr. President, I beg you, get the hell out. Don't listen to the hawks. Beat it. Scram. Get out. And if the Republicans want to scream that we're soft on defense, let them. Screw them. Who cares what the goddamn Republicans think anyway? I don't care what they think anymore. You shouldn't care what they think anymore. No one should care what they think anymore. They've proven that over and over and over again. Ever since you've taken office, all they've done is become truly the party of no. They would, I think if President Obama right now came up with something to do away with Roe v. Wade, they'd probably vote no. That's what kind of a mindset they've been in. So screw them. I don't care what the Republicans think. Enough of this hand across the aisle bipartisan shit. It doesn't work. It does not work. He should know that. And I know he had good intentions. I know he wanted to be everyone's president. Well, he's not going to be everyone's president, because they will not accept him as the president. They've made that abundantly clear. There's approximately, 30% of the people in this country that wouldn't accept anything, nothing, zero, zip, nada, nothing that Obama could come up with. About 30% of the people that have been polled said they wouldn't agree with one single thing he wanted to do, not now, not ever. So keep that in mind. Please keep that in mind, Mr. President. And keep in mind that the people who elected you, sir, want us out of Afghanistan if you would poll the people that voted for you. The people that voted for you, Mr. President, would be an overwhelming number against putting one more of our young men and women in Afghanistan. In fact, an overwhelming number would tell you today just what I'm saying is get out. Get out before one more American dies in that worthless piece of real estate. It's good for growing poppies. It's good for producing heroin. It's good for getting Americans killed. Good for getting Russians killed. It's good for getting anyone killed that goes in there. If Al-Qaeda is such a big goddamn deal and